Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Pointless Exercise Podcast. It's time to talk baseball with David Brown, senior MLB writer for Bally Sports. I think I got your title right this time, Dave.
Yeah, that is exactly what I am.
Good.
It's a title that is in progress. You know,
I didn't write it. I didn't write it down. I probably should.
It sounds like that's what it is. For what's on my contract, that's perfect. So that's good. I'm going to put that on there.
Oh, you got a contract.
That's nice.
That's what got me in trouble with The Athletic.
We're kind of inside baseball.
I didn't have one. And then they said, hey, he doesn't have one. We don't need to pay him anymore. And so they didn't.
Well, they've made a lot of decisions with the people that they do pay. They don't send them anywhere hardly as much as they used to. So as much as the people in The Athletic are missing – the Scipio point of view, they're missing a few things right now. It's a weird time to be a journalist.
So I was watching the Red Sox feed of Red Sox and the Barbs, and the Braves just walked off the Red Sox, but
yes,
Dennis Eckersley and Babe O'Brien were chatting, and Dave said, oh, he said, we got a NBA score. The Bucks just beat the Celtics. Now, they're announcing this game in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And Eck goes, wait a minute. That game was here, right? Dennis, you're not supposed to give it away that we're not actually in Atlanta.
Right.
I mean, because sometimes like announcers will be like, it is kind of annoying, like a day game, especially in hockey or basketball where they're inside. And they'll be like, you know, it's a game starting at noon. And they're like, well, you know, tonight. It's like, no, it's not tonight. But I don't think even a guy like Dennis Eckersley is literally going to get the city wrong that he's in, unless he's in concussion protocol. And that could happen. Because sometimes you don't know. What city are you in? I don't know. Boston. Well, close enough.
I enjoy Dennis Eckersley a lot, but it does seem like he might actually forget where he is.
It could. He is great. And speaking of Dennis Eckersley, and I'm not going to, people know, because I'm not even going to bother to tie the two together. If you don't, you can Google it. Did you catch Rick Manning swearing during a broadcast the other day?
Was that Rick Manning? I thought it was the White Sox broadcast.
No, that was the best part, was when Andrew Vaughn clanked a ball out to right field. Rick Manning was so offended that even as the opposing announcer, he goes, you've got to be shitting me.
You got your clankers.
Gavin Sheets.
That was Gavin Sheets.
Does it matter with those two?
It matters
Aren't
to their
they
moms.
Interchangeably.
One is clanking? Left-handed. One is right-handed.
Well, maybe. Are we sure that the one didn't grab the wrong glove and had to play the entire inning with the glove
sure.
on the wrong hand, and that's
it
why you didn't catch
it? Could have happened just like that.
That kind of stuff happens. Happens more than you think in Major League Baseball. Guys just get out to their position like, oh, this glove is for the wrong hand.
Right.
Ah, screw it. I'll be fine.
It's leather.
And you know the ball will find you. If you have the glove on the wrong hand, that's a saying as old as baseball itself. The ball
will find
you.
What happens with Il Demaro?
It happened to Il Demaro several times today, to the point where poor Rick Sutcliffe is. If I'm Il Demaro, I'm getting a restraining order against Rick Sutcliffe because Rick did tell us he's going to be announcing the games in Arizona this weekend. Apparently Jim Deshaies got like a whole week off.
It's great.
And Boog is not going to do the games in Arizona. He let us know that.
ESPN commitment or?
Well, I think Friday they are the Apple TV Plus game. And then Sunday he would be doing... Yeah, so I guess instead of going to Arizona for a game,
right?
He's going to let Pat or, God forbid, Chris Myers. Yeah. Chris Myers. I think Chris Myers has NASCAR to do, so it's either Beth Mullins or it's Pat Hughes.
Right.
Now, did you catch any of the – this was our first brunch with Benetti over the weekend.
I did watch it.
The Peacock game, which was also on NBC, which was savvy. To at least have the first one be on the mothership.
I tuned my TV to the over-the-air broadcast just to get into the Costas, Kubek, groove, 80s groove with the broadcast.
See, so you did. Were you excited that they had Vin Scully do the open?
I missed it.
I thought it was nice.
I saw that everybody liked it, and I wanted to watch it, and I saw links for it on Twitter, and I did not click on them, but I would have if I had.
So, you know, I did. People who listen to my many podcasts or read my newsletter, whatever, will be like, wait a minute, Andy didn't actually watch the game, did he? He doesn't watch White Sox games. Mm. I didn't. I watched the Open. I wanted to see who the Red Sox announcer was and saw that it was Kevin Youkilis with Steve Stone and Jason Benetti, because Benetti's going to do the games with at least one announcer of the two teams, and whenever they can, an announcer from both teams every week.
Right.
I think that's a good idea. That's a very old-fashioned way to do it. That's how Al Michaels got to do a World Series, because he was the Reds announcer. And he was in the rotation for one of those Big Red Machine World Series. He got to do a World Series when he was still a local guy. Right. And then I watched the very beginning because I wanted to see what graphics they used. And they're like, oh, they used the NBC Sports, you know, regional graphics.
Yeah.
And I was checked out. So next week I'll actually watch a game because White Sox won't be in it. Unless it's the Cardinals. And then I won't watch that either.
You have your standards.
I have my standards. They're stupid. They're petty. But they're mine. And I cling to them.
I like the use of the old theme, and I don't know, somebody played for me the theme that they used at the end when NBC had it, which was different than the da 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 da, da theme. Oh, yeah. It was a different piece of music, but it was good too. And it was.
Would that have been the music that they queued up right before Ryan Sandberg hit home run number 2 off of Bruce Sutter? Because Costas was doing the credits.
Well, that would have been the da 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 da. Oh, that's right.
So I think I know in my head, I think I can kind of hear the music you were talking about. Because I do believe that was the era when NBC had different, they had a game closing song too.
Yeah, sort of like This Week in Baseball did, sort of. Where, didn't they? Yeah.
They didn't play the Meet the Press music, did they? You know who wrote that?
I don't.
John Williams.
Oh, wow.
Yes, they went all out. They got John Williams to write the Meet the Press song. And I believe it's called, I used to know it. It has this very overwrought name. There's a whole thing. You can go to YouTube and listen to the whole thing. It's funny because you hear all this, all like the NBC News music you recognize within this like one, like 11 minute piece. They just pick out parts for different stuff. Like you hear the nightly news.
Right.
And then you hear, you recognize the Meet the Press part. And then you'll hear the music from Later with Bob Costas. No, that's not really in. No, they wasn't part of that. I forget what it's called. I was thinking Gathering Storm, but that's not right, because I'm thinking of Gathering Crowds, which, of course, was the This Week in Baseball music.
Yeah.
Which is completely different. All right. Well, that was apropos of nothing. But other than that, how did you enjoy the broadcast?
I liked it. I like the Benetti Stone broadcast. I know you don't watch the White Sox games, but they're very competent, which is not always what you get in the past with the White Sox, and that's a good change of pace. And I like he's not polished, but Youkilis, they are sort of similar. You know, he's got good energy and he tells good stories, and you know, I liked it. It's a big pain in the butt, you know, to have baseball in 48 different channels, but I don't know. I don't want to complain about that too much. I don't have anything blacked out usually. Well, sometimes the Royals are blacked out depending on how I watch them, but that's good because it's the Royals. But it's not like people who live in Iowa who can't watch anything. They have a real complaint. My complaints are minor.
They've got a lot of complaints, starting with the fact that they live in Iowa.
Yes.
The other stuff is just piling on. Now, did they ever show, like, during the broadcast, the booth, did Youkilis, like, hold his microphone weird, like, with his elbow way up over his head? Right, you could barely hear him. And they're like, Yuke, you're going to have to pull that down a little bit.
I didn't notice that. I know they talked about it. Actually, that was one of the things Benetti asked him where he got his batting stance from. And he said he didn't know. It was a bunch of different places. I was kind of disappointed in that answer. It's like, what are you hiding? What are you trying to hide, Euclid? Yeah. But they talked about his stance, but he didn't hold his microphone in any sort of
he
weird
should
way.
he should come up with like a, oh, when I was a kid I had scoliosis and I had to wear the brace and that's the only way I could hold a bat and I just got used to it.
Yes.
Just some bullshit story like that.
A lie is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you stick to it, then no, it becomes the truth. Remember George Costanza once said, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Right. And that's how our political system has evolved too. So
yes,
that was
absolutely
pretty...
just keep repeating it and eventually it becomes
true. Prescient.
I like Benetti. I do. I really thought that ESPN should have simply made him the Sunday night baseball guy.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice to see him get this weird late morning time slot on Peacock. But it's better than nothing. So, yeah, so we've got apparently Tuesday nights is Turner. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true.
That game, I always forget. I know that it's basically their like season-long practice for the playoffs. That
right.
They televise. Hey, as a bonus, we're going to televise it. You want to watch? Sure. If not, don't worry about it. And then Friday nights are a doubleheader on Apple TV Plus. We got the Peacock on Sundays. At some point here, we'll get back to Saturday, late Fox. Afternoon, early evening Fox or FS1 games. ESPN is Sunday Night Baseball. And then there's going to be some YouTube games again, apparently.
Oh, there have been. There's
there been,
have been. Like, it's like during the week at weird times, you know, 11 in the morning on a Wednesday.
It's almost like the owners just said, just told Manfred, just go find anybody to give us money.
Yes.
And then we'll just
no,
it'll
I think
be
you
fine.
Diagnosed it.
Yeah.
It's all short-term cash. You know, they talk about, well, we're growing the game with Apple II Plus E, my computer that I had at John Jay Elementary. I guess maybe they will by accident, but no, it's because of money. They get cash. And if
your elementary school was named after former Cardinal, Cub, and White Sox outfielder John Jay?
We didn't know it.
Wow.
Yeah, everybody assumed it was for the first Chief Justice, yeah. But yes.
For a scrappy, up-and-coming, he wouldn't even been in middle school at that time. That's
no.
Pretty. That is prescient.
He's retired, but I'm older than him.
Mm-hmm.
He just announced his retirement.
Yeah, I love when guys who haven't played for like a year and a half finally
right.
announce it. And everybody's
by
like,
the way.
Everybody's like, yeah, we knew.
We gathered.
Yeah. So we had a weird occurrence in the and the Rays, does anybody get no hit more than the Tampa Bay Rays?
You know, that was one of the things that I thought. I put together a day after story about Reed Detmers throwing his no hitter. And I thought, man, it seems like Yandy Diaz is always making the last out in one of these no hitters. But they hadn't been no hit in like 10 years.
Really?
Really. I know. Yeah. I know. Look, maybe I was.
It felt like the Joe Madden Rays got no hit like every couple of weeks. And they were so good. That's like the only way you can beat the Rays, just no hit them. You can beat
right.
them.
Right.
Yeah.
But apparently,
oh, go ahead.
It might have been true at one time that the Rays got no hit a lot, but
yeah.
I don't think it had happened since 20. That just doesn't seem possible now that I mentioned it, but
I don't know. Anything's possible.
I know. Obviously, I know what you mean.
That game started with they just decided finally to give Yu Darvish all of his trophies. Did you see that picture? There's a table just full of trophies.
Right.
Here you go. Or not Yu Darvish. Shohei Ohtani. Yu Darvish showed up trying to steal him, and they said no. I have Yu Darvish on the mind because before the Cubs-Padres game today, him and Seiya Suzuki did a ceremonial jersey swap.
Right. On the deck of the Missouri.
Yes. And I joke that the reason that they were doing it now is that Seiya decided he better swap jerseys before Jed trades him to the Padres for like...
I retweeted that joke.
Yes,
it was funny.
For four elementary school kids.
Orphans. Oh, right.
Or whatever it was.
Infants.
Yes. But I'm sure all four of the guys they got for Darvish, they're all going to be all-stars for years for the Cubs when the Cubs turn things around in 2037. It's going to be great. So Shohei gets all of his trophies. And then the game starts, and then you get all kinds of weird occurrences. You get a guy throwing a, making like his, what, sixth career start, something like that.
11th,
11th.
but yeah.
Throwing a no-hitter. The game being a big enough blowout that everybody's favorite, Brett Maverick. He doesn't go by Maverick anymore. Does he? Wasn't he Brett Maverick Phillips?
Yeah, you hear it, yes.
Came in to pitch, and Mike Trout hit a ball about 800 feet off of him. Did you see his tweet to Trout this morning?
I didn't see that.
Brett tweeted to Mike Trout, "You got lucky," which is funny.
Yes. Yeah, it's I think that overall the position player business is overdone. I think people probably whine about it too much too. But I think teams like the Rays, oh my God, I know we have 12 relievers, but we can't use one of them for an inning. We
Yeah,
have
that's right.
to, we're going to burn them out. And they do, which is true. They do. They actually, they burn through relief pitchers. But it's not going to be because they pitched an extra inning in this one game. I don't know what advantage really. On the one hand, they're saying, well, we're giving up on this game, but we're competing in the long haul. That's their excuse. That's their reasoning.
Well, I made a proposal. Here's a sneak preview for anybody who listens to this tonight before the newsletter comes out in the morning. While going through the Cubs pitching staff, I came up with an alternative that I'd like the Cubs to check in with Major League Baseball. Instead of ever pitching Mark Leiter Jr., if they could just ask if they could just plug in the pitching machine. My joke then is a picture of Tom Ricketts, and it's like, who's going to pay for the electricity? But maybe you should get to that. Maybe you could get to like, because it basically turns into coach pitch at that point when you bring the right fielder in to pitch. And they do it all the time. He's like fourth on the team in appearances.
Yes. And he's got a funny, in the case of Brett Phillips, he's got a funny shtick. But at the same time, it's like a colleague, a former colleague, or whatever, Matt Snyder, who's one of the bloggers at CBS. He's got an old school heart or whatever, and he played baseball in Indiana. And he's like, does this not really kind of cross the line of mockery? And, I'm not going to get like super mad about it, but it sort of does. It's like, well, you're giving up on the game, and Brett Phillips comes in and basically he's like doing half of a Max Patkin routine out there. And then, we're getting to Rendon, Anthony Rendon coming up and switching, going left-handed. He's got, as you said, the wrong
Yeah, he didn't
thing
even
going
bother
on.
to. He put the shin guard on his front leg and then turned around so it was on the back leg.
I mean, in a way, and he comes up and he hits a home run. He's never hit left-handed before, and then he hits a home run. And it's fun and it's funny, but when you think about it in the context of what teams are doing and maybe these purists or whatever have a point that there's a little bit. I know I don't take anything too seriously, but maybe they're taking it a little less serious than they ought to.
Well, and he did it in the an, with three outs to go for his own pitcher,
And a no
throwing
hitter.
a no-hitter.
Right. Hey, let me do this clown thing. Yeah, I mean, and it's like on the one hand, we talk about no hitters and going, there's people complaining about breaking, jinxing and all that and stuff that doesn't exist. And but I mean, there's this kind of a semi-serious thing going on here. And Reed Detmer's trying to finish out a no hitter, and all of a sudden we got, I mean, admittedly, a clown show going on, and it's I don't know. I listen to myself and I sound, like a whiny curmudgeon, but I wonder if these people have a point.
Well, the last f before he got traded, the last few times the Cubs were on the giving end, which didn't happen very often, the giving end of a blowout late in games, Javi Baez would bat left-handed, and he, I think he's 1 for 2 as a lefty, and he almost homered in one of them. Makes a little more sense for Javi because Javi apparently does everything except throw a baseball left-handed,
Right.
which I think was the question I was going to have you ask him, but then he. He bailed on your interview because he had the
Thanks to the balanced or unbalanced schedule, the Tigers do return to Kansas City, so maybe we'll get him on.
He had his foot was too sore to talk to you. Is that
it was
what
a
happened?
Thumb. It was no, it
oh,
wasn't
thumb.
that.
It was a thumb. That's right.
It was the thumb. That, you know, I got it, and he's like, "Okay, I'll talk to you like after the game." And it's these kind of interviews when I talk to these guys about weird stuff, like, you know, do you do everything, you know, left-handed? You know, that's more of a pre-game kind of thing.
Right.
It's not really an after the game. But he's like, I don't really like to talk before the game, which I think I've heard him say before. I don't know if it's true, but I've heard him use the excuse. So I'm like, all right, we'll try it. But then his thumb just kept getting more swollen
bigger
and swollen.
Bigger. Yeah.
And he was like walking around with a club, and it just so the interview didn't happen.
You could see the heartbeat in the thumb.
Pulsating. Yes. But maybe we'll get him, and we'll find out about this left-handed business the next time the Tigers are in Kansas City.
So Anthony Rendon, switch hits, hits a home run last night. Today, on the lineup card, Joe Maddon listed him as a switch hitter.
Joe's a cut-up.
Yeah, pretty funny. So I thought it was funny that so Rendon bats the wrong way and hits a home run. And just down the Pacific Coast Highway at almost the exact same time, Frank Schwindel misses a grand slam by like a foot, and everyone is blaming the baseball. And it's like the Angels have guys batting just for kicks, batting the other way in their home ring. I'm not going to throw a pity party for Frank. He apparently was batting the proper way.
Now there's the one other factor, the two baseball factor, not the two.
Yes.
Not the two factor often.
So that the two baseball thing came up on the marquee telecast today. Rick Sutcliffe had one of each.
He
gave them to Boog and asked Boog if he could tell the difference, and Boog could.
Because Boog's pretty smart.
On one ball, he could, you know, like with his fingernails, he could make the hide move. Where the other one was wound so tight that he couldn't.
Right.
So that was there. Then Rick's like, we proved it. To which, about 30 seconds later, Boog is like, okay, well, we didn't prove anything. But
yes. Method ignored. Right.
But you found two baseballs and they're different, and now you're convinced. But yeah.
Who knows where you found them? And if they really are from two different batches.
So is it the theory now that baseball's going to like sneak the old balls, the livelier balls, into national TV games? It's like, what? No, just switch back. If you're really that concerned about it, just go back to it. Whatever.
With the supply chain, though, how quickly can we do
this? They're all on a truck. The Texas governor has blocked the truck at the border. Right. They're having to search it. And the baseballs are being held up. They're on that truck. That truck is full of PlayStation 5s, baseballs, and baby formula. And Texas won't let it into the country. You son of a bitch. It's terrible. The Angels are, since Joe went crazy.
Yeah.
And walked Corey Seager with the bases loaded. They're like 18-5. They're
cause and effect, Andy.
Yes, they're in first place. Even with the Astros, who I didn't see how they did tonight, but the Astros had won 8 in a row, and they still couldn't catch the red hot Joe Maddon Halos.
The Angels, they got this no hitter out of Reed Detmers, who'd been kind of mediocre before, and Shohei hadn't really been hitting, but they've had Turner Ward, who's kind of, I don't know, he's like a Dwight Smith kind of guy or something, you know, 28-year-old mediocre bench player who's turned into a great power hitter, one of the deadliest in the American League for some reason. So that's going on. I don't know for how long. So I don't know how long Joe is going to have his team in first place. They do have Trout and Ohtani. So.
Yeah, they do have Mike Trout, whose OPS, I believe, is over 250 at the moment. Something high. Apparently he's good. I forgot because he got hurt last year. Everybody forgot that he was good, but apparently he's good. And then Shohei is just ridiculous. So, it's not unlike the. I mean, you think of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani, and I think, I mean, it's pretty much like the Cubs with Rafael Ortega and Alfonso Rivas. I got the both teams, two of the best players in baseball on their teams. They should be able to win copious amounts of games.
It's an uncanny resemblance. You're right.
So did you hear the Frank Schwindel saga?
About going down and coming back?
Got sent to Iowa. And it's a very similar story to me. I was telling you about the flat tire that I got. he had a flat tire, so he couldn't leave immediately when he was dispatched to Des Moines. He had to wait till the morning and then take his car and get the tire fixed, and then he could take off. Meanwhile, unexplained injury. I love that the Cubs won't disclose why David Robertson or Marcus Stroman are on the injured list, but if you go to your Yahoo Fantasy page, both of them have COVID-19 next to their names.
That's the information you get if you buy Fantasy Plus.
And so they called Frank, and they're like, "Okay, Frank, where are you?" And he's like, "I'm at the Super 8 that I live in Elmhurst or wherever he lives. I haven't left yet." I'm like, "All right, we're gonna get you on a plane to San Diego. We're not gonna send you down yet because we need you." And someone on Twitter tweeted out, "I don't think Frank's going to Iowa. He's on my flight to San Diego." And the best part was the Cubs bought Frank a middle seat.
Oh.
All the way to San Diego.
Tickets. At least he's, kind of trim and angular, sort of.
So now the Cubs are injury riddled at the moment. Stroman and Robertson are out for mysterious reasons. And then even some of their quote unquote healthy players, Seiya Suzuki and Nico Horner, both have bad ankles. Nico got his today by running into an umpire. Remember last year he ran into Ian Happ and they both broke it was like the Mike Cameron did Mike Cameron run into?
Yeah.
That one was bad. They almost killed each other. Happ and Horner really nailed each other last year. This time fly ball to center field, Jason Hayward misjudged it, couldn't get to it. So Nico, who was in the shift, he said he needed to get over to cut it off, ran right into the second base umpire out in short left field. Both of them went flying.
Never happens.
Nico writhing in pain on the ground. Hops up, says he's fine, stays in the game. Inning ends, he takes his at bat, and then he disappears because his ankle is now the size of Paducah. He's also hurt. Nick Madrigal has a bad back. He has a tiny little bad back. right after Horner got hurt, Rivas chased a pop-up down the right field line and kind of awkwardly hit. Teams love to put, the sidewalls at, mid-thigh height.
Right.
Just for maximum awkwardness and pain. And he nailed it and then fell into the net, Eloy style. And Sutcliffe was sure that he was going on the injury list, too. Oh, we lost another one. It's like, Rick, he's walking back to first base.
Sutcliffe runs down there to carry him off the field.
But one of the problems the Cubs have is that they are literally running out of guys on their 40-man roster that they can bring up.
Yeah.
In the event that these guys end up on the injured list. That's how they ended up with the great Ildemaro Vargas, who right now is on the team via the taxi squad.
Right.
He's technically on the team replacing one of the COVID guys.
Right.
Which means he hasn't been put on the 40-man yet because they don't want to have to do that. But if Horner ends up hurt, then they have to do that. Then somebody's got to go. Now, here's the good thing if you're Jed Hoyer. Your 40-man roster is mostly full of crap.
Right.
You can waive anybody, and they're getting through waivers because nobody else wants
it. Right.
So I love all the hand-wringing about, oh, my God. This was great. Two guys got hurt. Michael Hermosillo hadn't played forever. All of a sudden, bad quad. Sean Newcomb, who's pitched three times because they're trying to fix him, He also sore ankle. It's amazing those guys managed to get hurt without doing anything.
Right.
So they're both on the injured list. Because the Cubs seem deathly afraid to waive Michael Hermosillo because somebody's going to claim him. Because, I mean, if you get a chance to claim a guy with a 340 OPS, you're going to jump at that.
I'm sure it's one of the bad balls' fault.
It probably. He's the Cubs in their little...
In Spanish, to get hurt without doing anything, so they're both on the injured list cause, because it seemed deathly afraid to waive Michael Herman Lehman doesn't if you get a chance to claim a guy...
I don't know why my watch is repeating what I just said not accurately. Anyway, sorry about that. Was that Siri?
That was the other one. What's her name? Sylvia? No.
I wonder if it's... I wonder if when I said Michael Hermosillo, if Siri got all excited. I think he did.
You must have had to hit a button for all that to happen.
No, it just started talking to me. Oh, God, I lost my train of thought, and I'm sure I was about to say something brilliant.
Well, the running out of players. Does that help?
Yeah.
40-man
run. I think we were talking about the phantom injuries, because, God, you wouldn't want to lose Sean Newcomb. Who the Cubs had to trade for because they were sure he wasn't going to get through waivers to them. Of course, that was just a few weeks ago when there were teams other than the Reds that were between them and the Reds. Now, the Cubs have 11 wins. That leaves just three teams now that haven't achieved their 10th win. Do you know who those teams are?
The Tigers?
Yes.
And the Tigers and the Reds and the
isn't it your Royals?
Don't give them to me.
At 9-18, well, you lived.
Do they really only have 9 wins?
Yeah, they're 9-18.
Yeah, they've sucked.
Yes,
they've gonna have to fire some people. Suck. I don't know who. I mean, they're not gonna fire Dayton, but
Mike Matheny can always go back to commercial real estate. It worked so well for him the first time.
Not so good.
Which was why he ended up managing the Cardinals.
Yeah, I mean, in Matheny's defense and the players who are there in their defense, the Royals have not spent money in, like, they did a good job of spending money. They were, like, in the middle of the pack and even, like, almost in the top 10 when they went to the World Series and the year after. And then Hosmer and Moustakas left, and they've never replaced them with contracts. I mean, and it catches up to you. They haven't had a great... I don't know why we're talking about the Royals, but their player development's been lousy and their pitching hasn't come through, and it's just, it's not fun right now.
Yeah. I've completely forgotten about it, but do you remember who the Field of Dreams matchup is this year?
Yeah, it's the Cubs and the Reds, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Sure, ESPN has that baby circled. Like, wait a minute, what? Why did we agree to that? Huh? Can we have a well-timed COVID outbreak and we get to replace them with real teams? Because it was supposed to be... So the Field of Dreams game was supposed to happen in 2020 for the first time, right? And it was... Right.
The White Sox and the Cardinals?
White Sox and the Cardinals. And then the Cardinals, they all went over to Saugat and they licked doorknobs right before the season started. And then they couldn't start the season for like 2 weeks. Screwed up everybody's schedule. And then it was going to be, I think, the White Sox and the Yankees. I think the Yankees were going to, hey, we'll hop over there for a game. That'll be fun. And then they ended up saying, all right, we just can't do it at all. But then they kept that matchup for last year. But it's just funny that they're like, I got a brilliant idea. Our showcase game. Let's take the two worst teams in the National League and they'll play. Somebody's got to win. That's what they'll just have to title it. Somebody's got to win. That'll be great.
It might end up being amusing, I guess. We'll see if Joey Votto's back from the COVID.
There's a fairly good chance that one of the Cubs will literally just get lost in the corn.
Right.
Like chase a home run out there and they'll be like, they wait about 20 minutes and like just substitute. We'll send a helicopter. We'll send up a flare.
Something. A drone.
Yeah, right. We don't know where Michael Hermosillo is. Maybe he's walking to Iowa. He's in Iowa. He's just walking to Des Moines.
Right. Can we go to infrared? Do we see anything?
Is that a deer? Or is it? What is that? I hate when they get the corn. They eat.
Is it rob deer?
Be out there detasseling. Pick up some extra cash during the game. Oh, one of the things I wanted to ask you about when we're talking about the weird no hitter and is this whole thing that's really started early in the season when the Giants were whipping up on the Nationals and just kept doing it. In fact, there was, I believe it was Mauricio Dubon. And if not, I'd just like to say.
No, that name
Mauricio
is familiar.
Mauricio Dubon.
Stealing a base or something.
He bunted in like a 9-1 game or whatever. And when he got back to the dugout, they showed shots of the dugout of Gabe Kapler having a very animated conversation with Mauricio. And both broadcast teams, the Giants and the Nats, were like, ah, see, there's Gabe. Tell him Mauricio, I know you're a young player. We don't do that here. And then after the game, they asked Gabe about it, and he's like, no, I was telling him that was good because that's what we're going to do. We're not going to stop trying to score because it's stupid, because it's baseball, and no lead is safe because you can't run the clock out. And right. He's like, oh, that never happens. And then what happened this week?
The White Sox blew a
was it a 6-run lead in the ninth inning?
Yeah, six or seven. Yeah. Maybe 7-1.
One of the Nationals got mad. It was basically saying, well, if we get a big lead on them, we're going to keep scoring. Which Gabe is like, yeah, that's fine. That's kind of the idea. Like, it's weird that we play one way until one team gets what we think is a comfortable lead. And then apparently the team that's getting beat is the one who gets to decide.
Right.
When the other team should stop taking extra bases, trying to steal a base, bunting. It gets back to one of my favorite red asses, Bob Brenly, when he threw the fit when, was it Ben Davis?
Ben Davis bunting on Curt Schilling's no-hitter.
Yeah. And he's throwing a fit about that's not how we do it. Do you remember what the score was when Ben Davis did it?
It was like 2-0.
It was 1-0.
It was 1-0.
He was trying to get on base because he'd be the tying run.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, the unwritten rules of baseball are almost all bullshit. And they were, you could tell they were written by crotchety old white men, because the ones we have to live with the most are you can't stand there and watch a home run that you hit 800 feet. You're not allowed to admire it. Don't flip your bat. Whatever. Oh my God, don't do that. Swing on a 3-0 pitch if you're way up in a game. Fernando Tatis learned. He apologized. It's bullshit. I always thought that the reason for the once you're up 6 or 7 runs not to do that is at some point everybody's like, if we just make some outs so we can go home. Yes, you're gonna win. This doesn't need to last 4 hours. But at the other hand, if the other team is gonna bring in like the right fielder to pitch. Because that happened in one of those Giants games. Jack Peterson hit a home run off of one of the Nats position players. And they asked him about it. And he's like, they were going to be trying to hit a home run. He's like, of course I was trying to hit a home run. He was trying to get me out. I'm trying to hit a home run. And it's hell of a lot easier because he's a position player. I wanted the homer. So that there's a team that just is just embracing it.
You don't want to go up, or you shouldn't want to go up there as a hitter. Oh, no, I wanted to make an out. I mean, really. You joked a minute ago about teams just kind of making some outs so we can go home. But as a hitter, you don't want to go up there against another hitter who's pitching and make an out. You look like a wuss.
Well, I wasn't really joking. I think that's why those unwritten rules exist. Yeah. It was the team getting their ass kicked. It's like, we've already beaten us. Just make some outs. Take your win and go home.
About all that is,
because the only way that works is if you stop trying to score when you're up then.
Yeah.
That's the only way that works.
Right.
Maybe the unwritten rule should only apply in the opposite direction. If you're down 8-0, you don't get to swing anymore. You just have to stand there and take your strikeouts. Go home, you loser. Your team sucks. You're getting beat. Go home.
Or this would be better. What if the team that was up 7 runs had to bring in a position player to pitch to get the game closer? Right. That would be – I like that idea.
Yeah, I've always thought that the you know, like the old free throw rule in basketball, which is, has been amended. It used to be that if a player was injured – and couldn't take his free throws, the other team could pick anybody on the team to shoot the free throws. Now you have to pick, you only have to pick from the guys, at least the NBA, the guys that were on the floor. You don't get to, like, you know, Granville Waiters doesn't have to take off his sweats for the first time in 4 years and shoot a free throw. I've always thought that the same thing should happen if a pitcher gets, oh, I know why I thought of this rule. Okay, so when they put the, you have to pitch to 3 batters in a relief appearance. And one of the big things that I always get back to, same thing with when they're like, okay, we're going to, one of the rules we might change is the having the way they do the shifts. What I want to know is, what's the penalty? If a team lines up illegally in baseball, what is the penalty? Yeah. Same thing as, what if you try to take your pitcher out? What's the penalty? Right now they're like, he can't leave. He's got to pitch. I think if you try to take your pitcher out, then the other team should be like, that's fine. We get to pick. Who's going to pitch? We're going to pick anybody on your team, and that guy's got to pitch now. I like that rule. You could do the same in a blowout then. You could go out and, you know, all right, we're down by 8 runs. We get to pick the pitcher now for the next inning and see what.
Well, I mean, remember when they were talking about how they're going to change the playoffs, they were saying you could pick your own opponent. So, I mean, that's still far away from what you're saying, but it isn't completely foreign.
Yeah, I always like that concept because it only exists for one reason. It's to piss people off. It's for somebody to play the stupid, you know, the whole nobody respects us thing, which is always crap. This could literally be what they wanted to play us. They think we're so bad they wanted us. So that would be good. Yeah, I've never understood that stuff. I just I mean, we had a not unrelated thing during one of our Remember This Craps. I think it was 93, I think. Whatever Sammy Sosa's first 30-30 season was.
Mm-hmm.
And the Cubs were bad. And, you know, go figure. And Ron Santo was getting pissed because late in the season, Sammy, anytime he got on first base, was just trying to steal second base. Didn't care about the situation. Didn't care about anything. He was just trying to get to 30 stolen bases. He was just going to run. And Santo's getting all pissed off as a crotchety old white guy who wanted to enforce all the unwritten rules. And it's like, all right, Ron, I got to tell you, if he gets 30-30, everybody's going to remember he got 30-30. They're not going to remember that he got thrown out 8 times before he got the 30th stolen base. Nobody's really going to care. You know, if the Cubs weren't 11 games out of first, maybe this would matter. It doesn't.
Right.
That was one of my, first, like, eye rolls at the supposed unwritten rules of baseball. It's like, who cares? Nobody cares. Maybe that'll write them down then. If they're that important, maybe it's time somebody writes that stuff down.
Well, and then they don't become unwritten anymore and they lose their mystique. And also it's easier to understand how silly they are once somebody writes it down.
I did enjoy Chris Woodward complaining about the home run. That was Aaron Judge, right? Hit the walk-off homer.
It was Glaber, wasn't it?
Oh, it was Glaber. You're right, it was Glaber.
And yeah,
he was trying to contain himself, and then finally said, "You know, that's an out in 99% of parks." You know, said this is a little league park or whatever he said. And then did you catch Aaron Boone's retort to that?
Yes, your math is wrong.
He goes, "There's only 30 parks; it can't be 99%."
It's the smartest thing Aaron Boone will ever say.
That's right. Yeah, I used to say when Aaron Boone was on Sunday Night Baseball. I used to say that he always sounded like he had a gaping head wound. I thought it was hilarious that the Yankees were like, that guy, that's the guy we want managing the team. Woo, listen to that.
It's a good leader of men.
Apparently.
So they claim.
Apparently, he's a good leader of men. So the, you know, the Cubs are beat up. The White Sox are also beat up, which they are clinging to, despite the fact that one of the guys who's not hurt, Tim Anderson, has committed more errors this season than two big league teams.
All of them in one inning, I think. He just committed 27 errors in one inning against the Cleveland.
Everyone's just kind of assuming that, well, when the White Sox will get everybody back, they'll be fine. But, I mean, it's hard for me to say this because I don't watch them, but I know what happens. They were basically a 500 team the entire second half last year, too.
Right.
So it could be that there's
a 500 team with not a lot of, you know, oomph or it's like, well, we know we're coasting, and they sort of cop that attitude that you hate, that you worry that your front running team's going to get. It happened to them, and they haven't been the same since, you know. And yeah, I mean, there's something to what you're saying, that it isn't just a matter of Eloy being hurt and Andrew Vaughn being hurt and so on down the line, and you know, some of their better players and some of their mediocre players have been nothing. So have contributed very little. So they're not very impressive. They play bad defense. They don't hit like they should have. Their pitching's all right. But you know, with two of those three things not necessarily working, you know, I mean, Byron Buxton and Carlos Correa, as long as they're on the field, they're pretty great players for Minnesota. And the Twins, it's not like the Twins have all kinds of depth, but I can easily see them winning this division easily.
Here's how magnanimous I am. The White Sox have a hole at second base. I would, as a Cub fan, I would be willing to give them Nick Madrigal back.
I knew you were going to say that.
Just as a show of good faith. Would you like your slappy little singles hitting?
Slap happy.
Tiny little second baseman. I enjoyed making fun of Nick Madrigal when he was a White Sox. I thought it was a ludicrous. He was the fourth pick in the draft. The fourth pick in the draft. He came and hit 340. In this half pandemic season.
Right.
And then he hit 305 last year, but he got hurt. His average was, and he got hurt. And he's hitting, I don't even want to look it up. It's, I think it starts with a two, but it might start with a one.
Oh.
It's not good. But he makes up for it by, he never walks.
Right.
He hits for no power. He's not particularly fast. And he doesn't really play good defense. So he's the total package, really. There's a good get by Jed.
It was a weird pick because, like, how do you project this out? I mean, did they think he was going to be – what did they think he was going to be?
I think both the Cubs – or both the White Sox first and then the Cubs valued something dumb. And that was there's not – you know, we get these long arguments with people. There's not enough – the ball's not in play enough. It's too much – you know, home run, walk, or out. This three true outcome stuff. What this game needs are some guys who could just put the bat on the ball.
Sure.
And that would be fine if the guy putting the bat on the ball can hit it more than 64 miles an hour and off the ground once in a while. So I think the White Sox are like, look, this is the perfect complement to what we have. Is this guy who's going to be hit the top of our order, and he's going to hit line drives everywhere. He's never going to strike out. This is going to be great. And then after a while, they're like, I don't know. And then the Cubs are like, hey, you know what we need? We need a guy who's going to hit line drives all over the place. And he's not. And they're like, we got one of those. Huh? Well, there we go. Let's do this. And they did it. And now both teams are like, oh, that wasn't great. I wish we hadn't done that. It's very reminiscent of Dave Kaplan likes to tell a story about the when the Cubs got eliminated by the Dodgers in 2008. They got swept by the Dodgers in 2008.
Yeah.
They're out there in LA. That was the famous one of the Cubs tore the water fountain off the wall, and the Dodger flooded the Dodger visiting dugout. And it was most likely Kerry Wood because he liked to destroy things after games. Probably hit it with a boombox and not even a bat. But apparently, Jim Henry and Lou and Mac Sinatra and a few other guys are sitting in the lot in the bar in the lobby of the hotel, and Lou is pissing and moaning up to Henry about how we're too right-handed. That was our big problem with this whole thing. We're just too right-handed. The only left-handed bat you gave me is a freaking guy from Japan who was batting with a wet newspaper. And so the Cubs responded in the offseason by trading away Mark DeRosa, so they had enough money to go get Milton Bradley. It's like, okay, are you really fixing a problem, or are you just making more different problems? That's all they did. I feel like both the White Sox and Cubs with Nick Madrigal simply made different problems instead of
Right.
fixing them.
Right. Let's lose in a different way.
Like, people can't say we didn't try. They could say you're dumb, but I guess they can't say you didn't try. Oh, one of the things, have you noticed this? I enjoy this. I don't know why I thought of it when Dusty Baker won his 2000th game as manager.
Yeah.
Bob Nightingale's Twitter feed just turned into the Dusty Baker. It often does turn into the
Yeah.
Dusty Baker appreciation thing. What it reminded me of, because Bob's one of these guys, and I don't think you're one of these guys. Correct me if I'm wrong. There is some baseball Twitter that when a team tweets out congratulations to a player for getting his 10 years of service time, usually the MLBPA will tweet out that a player has 10 years of service time. There are certain writers who just immediately retweet it, like it's the biggest accomplishment ever.
Right.
It's like, you're literally retweeting the fact that they now are fully vested in the pension plan?
That
I mean, that's
is a
great for
big.
them, but I don't know that the fans give a shit. That Eric Hosmer is not only now fully vested, but the Padres can't trade him. That's what you should be congratulating him, because now the Padres can't trade him, without his consent.
Right. Congratulations on your leverage.
Just love that. There was a whole rash of them early in the season. Guys
Well,
hitting their 10-year.
it's a way to show that you are, I don't know if it's ideologically or you're sympathetic or something. You worked hard to get here and now you got something out of it.
I'm not saying that it's not. It seems weird to me
It is a little weird.
that it gets like. I think it's fine. If I was a player, I would want my union to recognize the fact that I got my
Right.
10 years in. I think it's weird when national baseball people then retweet it with comments too. It's like, way to go. It's like, what? Way to not get cut for 10 years. Congratulations. Because I know it is a big deal for players. It opens all kinds of lifetime benefits that they heretofore were only eligible for a fraction of. But it seems odd that that fans in general are supposed to get super excited about it.
Yeah. It's weird. You're right. It's strange. It's a little bit of a strange thing for a fan to get excited about. And it also is kind of a little bit of a fanboy kind of attitude that the writer is adopting. That it's like, my buddy got his
Yep.
and
It really
well.
does smack of we're pals, aren't
Yeah.
we? Wink, wink.
Right?
I mean, I will be happy like when the Cubs tweet out congratulations to Patrick Wisdom on being the fastest player to 500 career strikeouts. I will be more than happy to retweet that for P Wiz and
I
congratulate
don't
him.
know if the MLBPA is gonna
Yeah,
retweet that one though.
that's true. Great, way to go. Nobody's ever struck out 500 times in their first 100 games. But you did it. We don't even know how you did it. It seemed mathematically impossible, but you did.
Right. It's like Tim Anderson's errors.
I don't know what made me think of it, but maybe it was Ildemaro and his crazy day with the avoiding the baseball in the field today. But somebody during a Dodger game back in the 70s thought it would be really funny on a hot day. They saw Steve Garvey's glove sitting on the bench in the sun. And it gave somebody, most likely Jay Johnstone, a great idea. They went back to the clubhouse and they got a brownie and they stuck it in the glove. So the top of the first, the Dodger PA announcer, here come the Dodgers. They run out of the field and they all sat in the dugout and looked, and Steve put his hand in the glove and went, he had a now a completely gooey brownie, because he didn't put it like in the pocket. He actually shoved it into where his hand goes in the glove.
Yeah.
Which I enjoyed. I don't know why I thought of that today. So maybe I'm sure I thought maybe Ildemaro has a brownie in his glove.
Did you read that in a Jay Johnstone book?
I have read all three.
All right.
Jay Johnstone books. As a young child, I Temporary Insanity.
Yeah, I got that one.
I forget what the second one. There's an orange one and a blue one, and then there's some of my best friends are crazy, and that was he wrote that one after he retired. The crazy thing about those books was he wrote them while he was still playing.
Yeah,
and told like all kinds of stories. The reason I loved Temporary Insanity as a kid was he reprinted the entire uncensored Lee Elia rant.
Ah, right.
So, when you're hearing the Les Grobstein one on the radio, it was all beeped.
Right.
And then in his second book, he thanked Lee Elia for getting his book banned. Because there were certain school libraries that wouldn't put the Jay Johnstone book in it because of all of the colorful language.
Right. Did Les ever play uncensored versions of that? It seems like he did, but I might be misremembering.
I mean, he certainly was on at a time when he could.
Right.
Because the, what do they call them? The, not safe harbor
laws. Obscenity laws?
There is a certain time at night when they don't apply. And you can play whatever the hell you want.
It would be a good question for Les, unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately, we won't be able to ask this. I don't know. I would have had to have clicked back over from Art Bell.
Sure,
I was getting my UFO news, so I wouldn't have heard Les playing the potty mouth version of the Lee Elia thing. But the one thing, and I've talked about the Jay Johnstone thing on the Remember This Crap podcast, is it comes. I bring him up whenever we hit a year when he was still a Cub. Was he credited the fact that he got away with, like, he in the book, he's like, some of these pranks people don't know I was responsible for them until now I'm outing myself, because he said the key to being a really good prankster is to not have the need to be there when the payoff comes. They said that always gives people away, they're too busy looking. So he would set them up and sometimes just leave and just wait for other people to tell him how great it was.
Diabolical.
It is. One of them involved Rick Sutcliffe too, where while Rick was pitching, Jay went back into the clubhouse and cut the crotch out of Rick's underwear. So that after the game, Rick was standing at his locker and pulled his underwear up, and it just kept going up until it got to his armpits. Jay's like, I wasn't anywhere around that. He goes, but I heard all about it the next day. It was even better just to hear other people tell the stories.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's, I remember reading as a kid, reading Ball 4 and just being like, oh my God, you know, the stories he was telling, and not even realizing what a scandal it was at the time Boughton wrote it, because nobody ever told those kind of stories in a book. And same thing, he was still trying to be an active player when it got published. I think he was into his knuckleball phase because he'd blown his arm out, but he was still trying to pitch. And there were certain teams that wouldn't even consider signing him because of the book, which seems crazy now, but it was something that really happened.
The Colin Kaepernick of his day.
Yeah. He took a principled stand about telling stories about Mickey Mantle screwing broads on the road. Just like Colin Kaepernick kneeling for the national anthem. Poor Jim Boughton. He was a victim before his time.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think when we get to the Jay Johnstone, Jim Boughton portion of the podcast, it's probably time to wrap up the podcast.
I think we're leaving on a high note, but you're right. Yes.
All right. Well, until next time. Thanks a lot, Dave.
You're welcome, Andy.
Many of us have herpes.